Hi, everybody. This is Pam, and you're listening to the podcast Women Who Stutter Our Stories, which can be found on the blog Make Room for the Stuttering at stutterrockstar.com. And it's also freely available as a download on iTunes. Today, as always, I have the opportunity and privilege of speaking with yet another amazing woman who's going to share parts of her story. So I'd like to say hello to Roisin. Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Pam. Things are good. Good. I'm happy to be on the show.
I am thrilled that you're on the show. I've really really been wanting to
for years.
Yes. and been really wanting to learn and get to know a little bit more about you. So I'm really excited that we'll have this chance.
Yeah.
To get started, if you wouldn't mind, could you introduce yourself, tell us who you are and where you're from and what you do to keep busy?
Sure. Well, I'm, as you said, Roisin. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. To stay busy, I primarily work as a registered nurse in an emergency room in Manhattan. And I study at NYU for my nurse practitioner degree. But probably one of the most important things to me that keeps me busy is my involvement in the stuttering community and the support group I help lead in Brooklyn. So,
wow, all
that keeps me busy.
you certainly have a lot on your plate and a lot going on. What drew you into the nursing field?
Well, from a young age, I always wanted to be a social worker, and I knew that advocating for people and, you know, helping to empower people was what I was primarily interested in. And then at around age 20 or 19, I just kind of seamlessly floated into the nursing major from social work. I can't really say with any clarity how that happened. I was just 20 and it happened, and it's worked out.
Yeah, I guess so. If you're gonna go on to become a nurse practitioner, why are you pursuing that?
Because I want a little bit more autonomy in my practice, and basically just some more skills. And like nursing and acute care has the kind of special opportunity of working for a hospital that will pay for graduate school as I work. So it's just been like an incredible opportunity to take to kind of pursue that degree.
Yeah, wow, that's a real incentive.
Exactly.
yeah. Will you continue to work in the same hospital once you've finished?
You know, I'm not sure what I'll do when I finish. I've had many thoughts about if nursing is a field I'll stay in, or if I'll kind of I've gotten really interested into advocacy for victims of violence. And nursing in the ER, there's a role there, but I'm more interested in like the legal advocacy. So I'm kind of toying with that. So I feel like once I get that master's, I'll kind of see where I'm standing and how I'm feeling from there. I'm kind of all over the place, so.
Yeah, but it also sounds like you're opening a lot of doors for yourself by pursuing education while you have the opportunity, and also exploring the things that you're really passionate about, which is real important. How does obviously the obvious question is how does stuttering impact your work? How do you manage it?
It's been a journey for sure, and a process in learning how to manage my both my stuttering and my emotions around stuttering while I'm working. I think that as of now, I'm in a place where I feel pretty confident that I'm capable. So my work in regards to stuttering is in trying to help people around me understand what it is, so it doesn't stand in the way of my work. There are certainly times and days when it's I'll have a bad interaction at work, either with a patient or like a peer, and it's hard to kind of pull myself out of that sort of dark headspace. But for the most part, I've found that approaching my colleagues with a level of confidence and kind of like as an educator to them about stuttering has helped me feel in control of it.
Do you find that you're in that role of having to educate people about stuttering a lot, or does it not always come up?
It doesn't always come up. I almost wish it came up more. I'm always like prepared to be the educator in a situation where like I'm the only person who stutters. But I often feel that people don't think it's appropriate for them to ask questions about it, or like, or to be honest, they don't think it's that big of a deal. So like they don't ask. And I'm assuming that they're like, they're all concerned about it, but I think for a lot of people, they honestly, if it's not bothering me, they don't think it's an issue. But I appreciate the opportunity to educate people, but it's probably happens less often than I would like, I think.
Do you think some people tiptoe around it because they're like of, possibly afraid of embarrassing you or maybe offending you by, by them bringing it up?
Probably. I like always prefer to kind of go in there and do my job well and sort of have my personality unfold that way instead of being like, I stutter, here's why, like, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And like, you know, telling them how to view me. But I do think that often if we don't make a point to bring it up, that people assume that they have to tiptoe around us. What do you find?
No, that's why I asked you. I'm very curious about that because I stutter differently than you do. We're all unique in our stuttering, but I find that people are wary about bringing it up with me because they don't want to hurt my feelings, or they're not sure what it is. They're not sure if it's really stuttering or if there might be something else going on. So I think it's kind of like a combination of mine. But I know for many years, like with my family, we never, ever, ever talked about stuttering. And it was kind of like a taboo thing. And then as I got older, one of my sisters actually mentioned to me, you know, Pam, I always wanted to talk to you about it, but you never brought it up. So we thought that we weren't supposed to bring it up. So I'm just always curious how people actually, you know, deal with that and how others respond to it. Because I agree with you. I think that we need to be open and confident about it because people will take their cue from us. But it's not always so easy.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely times, and probably my most painful memories about stuttering are the times that, you know, like you're in this conversation and it's a pretty intense conversation for whatever reason. And I'm having a hard time, getting words out. And like, I can sort of see the person's face just transforming into a giant question mark. And they're like, what is going on? And then like that isn't necessarily painful, but what makes those times painful is like, because they're usually the times when I don't have like the presence or the mindfulness to stop and be like, I stutter, it's okay. I just sort of like try and get out of it. And then you walk away and that's the most painful time, I think. When like there's like no communication between the two of you about what's actually happening.
I can so totally relate to that because sometimes when I see somebody making that look or raising their eyebrows, or, you know, even averting their eyes, you know, sometimes that really bothers me and I don't say anything. And then I wind up like sometimes walking away and my eyes are stinging and you know, I find myself tearing up a little bit and then I get angry with myself for not having seized the opportunity to communicate and have a moment there. So yeah, I can definitely relate to that.
It's so hard though. I mean, like we honestly have like a 3 second, not even a 3 second, but in a moment you have to turn from like, I'm trying to tell this person something that's not related to stuttering. And then you block or something happens and you have to completely just like step up to the plate so quickly to be like, oh, it's okay. I stutter just to explain what's going on. I mean, it's such a change of direction and it has to happen so quickly that it's hard to do that all the time.
Absolutely. And in those couple of seconds where you're having to change gears really quickly, I sometimes think, is it worth it with this person? Because I may not see this person again. Right. Or, you know, is it important enough in this situation to bring it up? Because like what you just said, if it doesn't have anything to do with stuttering, do I want to make it about stuttering?
Right.
And I sometimes have that dilemma.
Yeah, totally.
When you've had moments like that where a person's face becomes a question mark, do you ever feel embarrassed or offended by somebody's reaction?
I rarely feel offended. I think I've had like a long childhood and adolescence of like practice and feeling shame versus feeling offended. So I rarely am upset with the person. I, in those situations, there's always a, even if I, tell the person I stutter, if then it ends up being a really positive interaction, which happens often, there's always a wave of that embarrassment over me. And it's amazing how quickly it can like take me from a place of feeling fine to a place of feeling like, everything is just down the drain. Just like this job that I've been doing is down the drain. It's like my progress in life is down the drain. Like it can bring me to a dark place so quickly, that I've like over the years try to now like have better skills about preventing that like sort of downward spiral. But I think it's really, I mean, I've never had a situation where I have someone react in like a strange way and I don't respond emotionally.
Do you still have moments where shame creeps in at those inopportune times?
Yes, I think it does. I think it takes a different face now because I know better than like feeling direct shame. I have a perfect example of this actually. I was working probably a month ago, and I was speaking to a doctor. And he had o overheard me t telling a patient something about a test, and I started in the emergency room like three months ago. So I'm still kind of training and learning. And I had told the patient something that was incorrect. And while I was telling the patient, I was stuttering a lot. And the doctor, and then I was talking to him, and we're friends. He's totally respectful of me. We get along well. And I was talking to him about it. He said, I overheard you in the room, and you were doing a really good job, like comforting her. She's very anxious. You were doing a good job about that. But just so you know, this test is done and actually in a different way. Blah blah blah. And it was very like he was not accusing me. He was not attacking me. He was not embarrassing me. And I said, oh, like thank you for telling me. And I walked away and felt like this horrible feeling of like I failed. Like I failed. And then I was talking to my coworker because I just like I was almost like on the verge of tears, which is kind of unlike me. And I pulled my coworker aside and was like, I just feel like I made this huge mistake with this patient, and maybe I've embarrassed myself in front of these doctors. I just started here. I want to prove myself. And I told her the story, and she's like, you didn't like that's not a big deal. And she like was really actually confused as to why I thought that me getting this test wrong was a big deal. And I realized when I walked away from her that what I wasn't saying to her is that it was not about the test. Like the test didn't matter. It was about that he had heard me struggling. And that instead of like immediately pointing to that because I know now like I shouldn't be ashamed of stuttering. I you know transform that shame into something else. But it was actually about the speaking. So I certainly still feel shame. It just sort of pops up in sneakier places.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
How did you get past that? How did you get past that shameful moment? You mentioned earlier mindfulness. Do you do things like that to help you move from one place to another?
On that particular day, it really helped to tell my co-worker, even if she didn't know the whole truth about where my emotions were coming from, just to sort of tell someone that I felt ashamed really helped a lot. Because she was like, "Oh, like that always happens to me. You make a mistake and then you feel bad, and then it will go away, and it's fine." And so it was nice to kind of reach out to her. But in terms of mindfulness stuff, I meditate at home. But to be honest, I don't think I do any of that in response to negative feelings around stuttering. I think I still just sort of kind of push through those.
Mm-hmm. So what has helped you arrive at a good place on your journey? Because it definitely sounds like that's where you are, yeah, at a good place on your journey. What's helped you with acceptance?
Knowing other people who stutter. I think that having a support group has been so invaluable to me. And I think that it's taken me almost, 3 years to realize how invaluable. But to be able to go into a group with people, whether it's once a month or for a weekend once a year, and just like feel that we can process things together, being able to like take that confidence and like that processing that back out into my life outside of a support group, I can say is like one of the most important things for me.
How long have you been actively involved in the stuttering community?
I went to my first support group in Brooklyn in 2008 into 2009. So for about 4.5 years or so.
Mm-hmm. And what made you decide to actually be a leader of your support group?
That just kind of happened. I mean, I was in the group for about 2 years, and I think that, not to like toot my own horn at all, but like I was emerging as like a natural. One of the natural leaders in the group. And then when our leader stepped down, it was just a natural kind of, for lack of a better term, promotion.
Mm-hmm.
it wasn't something that I had my eye on or that I was, pushing for. It just kind of naturally happened.
Mm-hmm. I like the way you said that you didn't want to toot your own horn, but you did it anyway. women generally don't like to toot our horns for some reason, and we need to because nobody else is going to do it for us.
Right?
Right?
And to be honest, before I said that, I was like, I'm about to toot my own horn, so I'm going to say this, which is so ridiculous because it doesn't make sense to say that.
Mm-hmm.
If the whole point of my comment is to like say something about myself.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I mean, you know, it seems like it's perfectly fine for men to, you know, to share their accomplishments or even brag a little bit about it, you know, but women, I think we're conditioned that we're not supposed to,
right.
You know, so, it, you know, and like I said, if we don't, who's gonna do it for us?
Right, true. Very true.
How long have you been going to the stuttering conferences?
This past year, a few weeks ago, was my fourth conference.
And you've been pretty involved in those as well, giving workshops and so I mean you've kind of like immersed yourself into the stuttering community.
Yeah, and the great thing about it is that because I think that it comes from such for all of us from such like an authentic place within us that like being immersed in it and like becoming more involved just happened so naturally for me. Like it was so easy for me to like whenever I'm asked to give a workshop or want to do something, it's something that like is so enjoyable and therapeutic for me that it doesn't feel like a hobby or like a chore. It just feels like a natural effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't feel like work, so therefore you want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Didn't you did a workshop on authentic stuttering, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the NSA.
Yeah. What does that mean, authentic stuttering?
So for my workshop, it was sort of focused around authenticity versus authentic stuttering. That like it's not necessarily that you have to openly stutter, or you know, or like change the way you stutter, or that there's one real authentic way, but just that people who stutter constantly have this external pressure to just simply because we're different in a very obvious way. There's this pressure that I always felt and I still feel to change, mm-hmm. to be closer to the norm. And the workshop was kind of about if you do conform, what do you lose? And is it worth struggling to conform worth it?
Wow.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like you would pay a toll for conforming in some manner or some way.
Yeah. I mean, and there were so many people who participated in the workshop who had so many thoughts on this. It was clearly something that a lot of people think is important, and we like pretty much broke down the practical cost and benefits of being vulnerable and being authentic to who you are. And it was really interesting to see that the prices for trying to change yourself to fit something are high. Even if they're not like high in terms of like you miss out on a job, but like the high where like you're giving a presentation and you tried not to stutter the whole time, or you did stutter a lot and then you didn't want to tell anybody. So you stopped being friendly with everyone in the room because the risk of honestly discussing the pain of that situation was just too high. So you just kind of, you know, cut yourself off from potential friends. And I think that people who stutter, and you can speak on this too, but I certainly have been in those situations and like paid that price so many times since a young age that it's just, at some point it was like, I can't pay anymore.
Yeah, I can. Yeah, I definitely can relate to that. I don't think that I thought of it when I was growing up as paying a price. I can see that now, but when I was growing up and trying everything I could to hide my stutter and not doing it successfully, but I didn't realize that until later. You know, one of the things that I did was I isolated myself because I just found that it was easier to be alone and not talk because then I wouldn't stutter.
Right.
So that definitely was a high price to pay, but I didn't see it at the time.
Right.
I only see that now in hindsight, and you know, I have a lot of regrets now for all that I missed out on because of fear and shame.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting though, because of course, when you, in hindsight, we're always like, being yourself is always better. You know, it's easy to say that, like be yourself and you'll be happier. But a big part of the workshop was talking about the actual, also the price of being authentic, can also be high. And it's not always easy or pretty to like be yourself. And we've all been in situations where like you're in a job interview and you're stuttering a lot and you advertise and the person tells you, you know, we can't hire you because of this. And that's a pretty high price also.
Yeah, yes, it is.
So people who stutter really, there is like a clear need to balance out those two and really think about what's the best way to live.
Wow, that sounds like that was just a really, really deep workshop. Did you get a lot of positive feedback from participants?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest, I think that one of the most moving comments from the whole, so we had this whole workshop and it was mostly younger adults, like 20, it was 20 somethings workshop, so mostly 20 somethings. And people were just raising hands all over the place. Like it was clear that they like just had all these thoughts on this topic. And then at the end of the whole workshop, this man in the back raised his hand, and he was a father of a teen who stutters.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "You guys, I love hearing about how you work out like being authentic between having to change and trying to find a balance that works for you. But I can say with complete certainty that you being brave enough to be authentic will save my daughter." And I think like everyone in the room just started crying.
Just, oh my God, I feel a chill right now just as you said it. And I wow.
Like, kids need to see you, you know, we're working in like high profile jobs, you know, in relationships, public speaking, like being happy and stuttering because they need to. And all of us were like, well, there's our answer. Like, there we go.
It just like completely validated why you did the workshop.
Right.
Was his daughter there?
No, she was actually in a teen workshop.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was interesting. We actually had like quite a few parents in the crowd whose kids weren't there.
Mm. That is kind of interesting. Just kind of reminds me at the end of the conference where that parent spoke to her child, like directly looked into his eyes and talked about the feelings and some of the regret that she had for not having done things quote unquote right. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that took a lot of vulnerability and honesty and authenticity,
right,
to be able to do that. And address the audience, but her child at the same time. I thought that was incredibly moving.
That was an intense moment.
Yeah, sure was. Before we run out of time, and it's amazing to me how time always flies when we're just having these really cool conversations. But we had the opportunity to work a little bit together with the stuttering monologues, and I was just so pleased that you were a part of it. And you had shared with me that you had another story that you didn't get an opportunity to share at the monologues, and I have been intrigued since we talked about it because you mentioned you had a title for your story called "Can I Get a Witness?" Can you please tell me what that's about?
Sure. So it has evolved recently, but initially it was about my yearning for people to allow me to stutter, and just to feel like when I'm speaking just to someone or to a group, to just have people witness me instead of reacting or concluding or guessing, and just the desire for that, and the reason I changed it and didn't do that was because I kind of realized that. That it's more like it's more that I feel that yearning towards myself, that like I want to be able to just witness myself and not kind of react emotionally and unreasonably and unkindly. And just witness this kind of natural inborn part of me. And so when I was kind of trying to write it for the monologue, it sort of fell flat because I kind of felt like I'm blaming all these people on the outside when like really it's about me. But I hadn't really formed that thought yet. Does that make sense? I kind of just took you in a circle there.
It does. I guess what comes to mind is, and this is probably a good wind down, is what do you think it will take for you to be able to witness your stuttering?
I think it will take time, more time, and I think it will take. I think that I could afford to like to practice being kind to myself more, because I preach that a lot. You know, I go to support groups and I'm kind to those people and I support them and I forgive them and I, you know, not forgive them, but like I'm always telling them like that I mean it. It's true. Like I truly don't judge them for stuttering, but it's hard to turn that kindness inward, I think. So hopefully, time and practice.
Do you judge yourself?
I think I do from time to time. Almost subconsciously, like kind of like that story I was telling about the doctor. Like, I was so quick to be hard on myself, so quick, and I think that's a form of, yeah, no, I certainly judge myself harshly from time to time.
Yeah, I think I tend to do that as well. I have like an inner critical voice. And I wonder if it has anything to do with being in the helping profession, because you indicated that you're able to be supportive and kind and help people empower themselves. And I am able to do those very same things for others, but not always so well for myself.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that has to do with the professions that we're in, because I'm in human services, education, and it just seems like it's much easier to do it for others than it is for self.
Maybe it's that we're drawn to those fields because we can really empathize and understand the importance of support and empowerment, because we like know the sting of judgment and like, you know, harshness, and we just have to take the extra step to like towards it, to turn it to ourselves also.
Do you think that women tend to be more self-critical than men? Or is that not a fair question?
I think that overall, women tend to be more empathetic sometimes. And I think that being self-critical comes hand in hand with that. I'm not really sure why. But I think it does, because you're just aware of the possibilities of the self and like where people go, and you're just more sensitive to those things. So I would say like I'm probably biased because I'm closer to more women than men, but I know a lot of women who are incredibly self-critical, not too many men who are.
Yeah. The same here too. And I just wonder if that's really the case, or that men hide it better.
I don't think it's necessarily a bad. I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think that it like allows reflection and examination. And it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, you're right. You have been on such an insightful, reflective journey with your stuttering and your life, it seems. Thank you so much for sharing parts of your story. I feel privileged to have gotten to know you a little bit better.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Pam, with like a pretty consistent, with a pretty sound judgment, because I've been on a lot of stuttering podcasts, I've never felt like so able to just share.
Oh, well, good.
and
I'm glad that you were able to, because it really does seem to me that we just had just a conversation, and I think that's more important than just like kind of like doing an interview. Mm-hmm. We've had a conversation, and you've shared and I've shared, and I'm glad you did again. So again, thank you so much for joining me and us.
My pleasure.
And this has been Women Who Stutter, Our Stories.